This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago, and our program today was entitled Our Collective Well-Being, the Role of Human Services in Illinois. We had four speakers: Judith Gethner, who's the head of Human Partners, Service Partners in Illinois; Maria del Socorro Pesquiera, who's the head of Latino Women in Action; Nancy Ronquillo of Children's Home and AIDS Society; and Donald Dew of the HSI Westside Neighborhood. And the general topic today under discussion was what would happen if the human service workers in the areas of job and economic opportunity, health, education, and public safety were to take a day or two off. The conclusion was we would have chaos. There would be no after-school programs. There would be no preschool programs. Public safety would be affected. Domestic violence, all of these important issues, education. And usually we think of the people who receive these kinds of services as clients, but they're also consumers, and they contribute to the business community and the well-being of society. So the fact that there's been no budget for 20 months in the state of Illinois is very, very serious and is causing many of these agencies to rethink not only their present, but their future.
I would like to introduce our first speaker and her PowerPoint presentation, Judith Gethner, who is the Executive Director of Illinois Partners for Human Service. Judy is the founding director of Illinois Partners for Human Service. Thank you. And since 2009, she has grown partners from a startup to over 850 providers of human services located in every legislative district across Illinois. As a leading voice within that sector, she has led a successful campaign to educate service providers on the budget impasse, other fiscal issues. She works very collaboratively, advocating with community organizations, state agencies, the private sector, elected officials. She's been appointed to the State Health Improvement Plan Council, the Illinois Single Audit Commission, and the Social Services Advisory Council. She was trained by the Industrial Areas Foundation in organizing, was a campaign manager for Vote Yes on the CONCON. She has served as the executive director of the College Living Experience, was Access Living's 2014 Advocate of the Year. Currently, she serves on the boards of the Illinois Consortium for 21st Century Schools and the Chicago Grand Neighbors Association. Judith Gethner holds a BS from NIU, Northern Illinois, and an MA from Northeastern Illinois University. Judith, we're delighted to have you with us. Can I help you up here onto the dais? There you go.
Thanks so much for inviting me to speak today at the City Club. I'm very, very honored to be here. As mentioned, I'm Judith Gethner, the Executive Director of Illinois Partners for Human Service. We're going to have a great discussion about the most important thing that I think exists today, and that is the well-being of our neighborhoods and our communities. Most of our time today is going to be in discussion with an awesome group of panelists who are going to come up here and join me. But I wanted to start by providing an overview about what human services is and what it does. When we think of support structures, we often think of physical support structures, like roads and bridges. And I think we'd all agree that roads and bridges are incredibly important for our state. What we don't think about is social structures. So I'd like you to please take a moment and look at this animation that describes the interconnectedness of human services.
What makes an Illinois community strong? Is it public safety? Or is it education? Or is it jobs and economic development? Or access to adequate health care? Or is it adequate child and elder care? Or is it affordable shelter, clothing, and nutrition for all? The truth is, it's all of it, and then some. For too long, people have thought of these issues as siloed. There's a job silo, healthcare silo, education silo, criminal justice silo, and so on. But the reality is, these social issues are interconnected. It's hard for a child to do well in school if they have health challenges or are facing shelter and nutrition insecurity. It's hard for someone to keep a job if they must care for a child or older adult at home, or if there are health issues. Crime impacts education, which impacts opportunity, which impacts shelter and nutrition, which impacts health, which impacts opportunity. This is what Illinois' Human Services Network is all about. We are hundreds of community organizations across the state who support families with a range of programs that address all the concerns that families face. Illinois Human Services is about preschool education, to get kids a head start on a successful education. In short, Human Services works because it is coordinated in addressing all the social factors that together determine the strength of our communities.
On each of your desks or tabletops, you'll find a book, a research book, that's entitled The Human Services as an Economic Engine. About 6 months ago, we did research on what is the value, the economic value of human services in Chicago, in all of the communities, and statewide. And there's a ton of data in here that I encourage you to take a look at to understand the importance of our sector within Chicago and the state. Just a couple of key facts that I just want to highlight. Annually, human services creates about $4.5 billion of economic impact in our state. Human services pays more than $500 million in state and local taxes. And in addition to impacting the local economy, we also have a very robust and highly educated workforce. Even in this age of acrimony and argument, there are some things that I think we all can agree on. So you're going to nod your head with me. Things that we all agree on is that it is important to function and have healthy neighborhoods. And there are important values that I think lead to those healthy, functioning neighborhoods. And I'm going to propose these four: jobs and economic opportunity, education, health, and public safety. And what I'm going to share very, very quickly is how human services focuses on these values. So first, jobs and economic opportunity. Every side of the political spectrum agrees that economic opportunity is central to a functioning society. Indeed, financial stability within the family is key to tackling a host of issues such as crime, poverty, education, and healthcare. Conversely, when families fall off the economic map, all sorts of negative and very costly consequences befall us. But today's economy has profound and systemic challenges. Stagnant wages and growing economic inequality are putting enormous strains on families across Chicago and the state. And human services plays a valuable role in that. Access to affordable child care or elder care can make or break a family's prospect for financial independence. Job training for the unemployed or underemployed facing a rapidly changing economy that require new skills to keep Illinois competitive. Sanctuaries from violence matters. Affordable mental and physical health services matter. Having mentoring and job training program after school matters. Can we all agree that education is a benefit for all of our collective futures? Education prepares our workforce and strengthens families and communities. But the ecosystem outside of school has as much to do with a child's success in school as what happens inside of school. Look at this chart. Kids spend 1,800 waking hours a year in school and 4,500 waking hours outside of school. To get higher graduation rates and lower dropout rates, we need a round-the-clock view of a young person's support structure. That is why after-school programs with mentoring and tutoring availability to the most at risk are, in a very literal sense, an education initiative. Adequate food, shelter, and clothing matters to students' achievement. Protection from violence matters. Access to mental or physical services matters. Human services are inextricably linked to our healthcare system. We can all agree that physical and mental health of ourselves and those we love are our highest priorities. But health also matters to the society as a whole. We spend about a fifth of our GDP on healthcare. The public sector has huge burdens and responsibilities related to health. Chronic disease and illness left untreated have significant and compounding negative impacts of the entire society. Human services is on the front line of healthcare access. We provide wellness screenings and mental health services and a whole range of preventive services. And as we know, we all know, prevention is everything when it comes to healthcare, both in terms of driving down costs and keeping people well. Well, we know it, but we don't behave like it. For every dollar that is spent in healthcare in this country, only about 4 cents goes towards public health prevention. And a variety of research makes clear that strategic investment in proven community-based prevention programs saves lives and money. And lastly, public safety. I think we all can agree on this. Crime is both a symptom and a cause of broader breakdowns. Crime places an enormous burden on public resources like law enforcement, courts, and prisons. Even worse, crime depresses economic development, steals jobs, complicates the education of our young people, and actually confines our elderly. A vicious cycle manifests because these conditions, jobs, education, mobility, are fertile ground for additional crime. Human Services provides recidivism programs which have shown to reduce the revolving door of our prison system. Human Services is gang prevention programs, which keep young people from heading down that place in the first place. And as mentioned before, Employment Services can do a lot to give people an alternative out of crime. Approximately 4 years ago, Illinois Partners led statewide research, and at the same time, the National Human Services Assembly in Washington, D.C. did national research. And what we both learned is that there is a gap in understanding. People don't understand or know what is human services. This is a word cloud of the responses that we received. When researched, we recognized that without people understanding what is human services, people fill in whatever they think. And then our funding gets cut because why would you fund something that you don't even understand? Or worse yet, we don't even do a budget in Illinois for human services. Yes, for 20 months, human services does not have a budget. So let's get started on a discussion. If I can invite up our panelists, Maria Piscara, Nancy Ronquillo, Donald Dew, please. Would you help me in welcoming them? We're going to start by each of them introducing themselves and the organization and the services that they provide. And then we're going to have an interactive questions. And I'm very mindful that we'll leave questions at the end from you guys. So just a reminder, write legibly on your cards. Thanks. So, Donald, would you start, please, by introducing yourself?
Yes, good afternoon, everyone. It's truly my pleasure to be here. Really appreciate the invitation. I'm President and CEO of Habilitative Systems, Inc. I've served in that capacity for 27 years, and I've been employed by the agency for 33, half my lifetime.
Maria?
Good afternoon. Buenas tardes. I have the pleasure and honor of being the President and CEO of Mujeres Latinas en Acción, one of the longest-standing Latina human service organizations in the country. We're celebrating our 44th year this year.
Thank you. Nancy?
Nancy Ronquillo. I serve as President and CEO for Children's Home and Aid. We've been serving kids and families in Illinois for 134 years, which is not half my life yet. But on some days, it feels like it. We create great families and great futures for kids, and it's a real honor to be here today.
Thanks, Nancy. So, Donald, in my opening remarks, I talked about the interconnectedness of human service issues, that our communities are ecosystems where one issue has a cascading impact on other issues. Can you give your perspective, please, on the interconnectedness?
Yes, and thank you. I'd like to draw attention to the interconnectedness of unemployment, poverty, and crime. Starting from the 1970s, various studies in the United States have clearly pointed out more and more the link between unemployment, poverty, and crime. There's been any number of other connections that have talked about the relationships between income levels, time spent in school, as you've also illustrated already, Judith, and, of course, the quality of the neighborhood and education were revealed. More importantly, the World Health Organization and others have been calling these various living conditions the social determinants of health, and looking at those factors that tremendously impact upon one's general well-being. They note that the social factors and the physical environment are especially important because they represent the conditions in which people are born, work, and play. Neighborhoods with affordable, healthy food, safe and accessible housing, and certainly quality employment opportunities can and have been demonstrated to influence positive behaviors and help create healthy lifestyles. So I'd like to just draw attention to those three factors and the importance of that interconnectedness.
Thanks, Donald. Maria, would you like to speak to the interconnectedness?
Well, certainly. And then thanks, Judith. When you think of interconnectedness, we don't live in silos as individuals. And certainly we see that in our own lives, but also in the lives of the women and families that we serve at Mujeres Latinas en Acción. Our organization it serves crisis intervention, being domestic violence survivors as well as rape victim survivors. We have youth services and economic empowerment. And many times people think, well, how do they all connect? Well, for us, we see it clearly. A woman will not leave her abuser or is more likely to stay in a relationship or return into a domestic violence relationship. She is not economically empowered. So, hence, economic empowerment and micro-entrepreneurship. A child who lives with domestic violence or violence in the home is more likely to be involved and engaged in street violence. So there are these interconnectedness of these issues on a day-to-day. And let's just think about this. If you, all here in this room, have to choose between your health, your work, childcare, day-to-day situations, are you going to choose one or the other? Or are they all just as important? I think that's what we mean by interconnectedness.
Nancy, in my opening remarks, I talked about the public perception of human services. I think we agree there's a great deal of misunderstanding about what we do and human services in general. How do you think the public perceives and elected officials perceive human services?
Well, the first thing I'd like to say is I think there's some myth-busting that really needs to happen, and one of the myths is that human services are all heart organizations and no data. We just kind of do what we do because it's a feel-good thing or you don't have a particular passion. But human services organizations are very rigorous around the results that they can achieve, and we constantly ask ourselves, what do the results tell us today, and how could we do better by those that we serve, the communities who invest in us, and the children, families, and communities who depend on what it is we have to offer, whether it is employment services, employment training, job security, child care, elder care. So I think that it's really important that the broader community understands that these are, we run businesses which have a bottom line, but it's a human impact and human value bottom line in addition to the financial. We can't go out of business. And that it's very rigorous, and we work hard not only to use models that have science behind them, so we have 30 years of science about the value of early childhood education. We now know that 80% of the brain develops in those first 5 years. That's a lifetime worth of learning and productivity and innovation potential that we can enrich and engender. We have the science, we do the work, but we don't necessarily fund the activity. There are lots of kids who could benefit, and we don't. The interconnectedness piece, too, I think, is not only do the early childhood providers achieve great outcomes for kids that are evidence-based, we know it helps families go to work and become productive tax-paying citizens. So we have a very virtuous cycle that takes place, and it's not just a draw or a burden on the community.
Thanks, Nancy. Donald, every day I find myself in awe of the professionals who work in human services. These are some of the smartest professionals you'll find anywhere. Can you talk to us about your teams, the positives, and what you experience?
Certainly, and some of our team members are here today. If you all don't mind just waving your hands and being recognized. You know, that's Team HSI over there, and let me just say that these folks, they have sacrificed making millions of dollars elsewhere to come and serve as servant leaders within the Westside communities. We've been in business for nearly 40 years, serving thousands of persons with special challenges, special needs, persons who would otherwise be institutionalized, persons who would otherwise be incarcerated, persons who basically have no sense of hope for a better day. We have been working feverishly not only to create opportunities for those professionals to find value in that work, but also to create additional opportunities for our community and various local businesses to see the value in what we do. For example, HSI grew out of a community ministry, church ministry, Clare Christian United Methodist Church. One of our founders is 95 years old and still having significant impact. And she's making that's the team of HSI. So the team is the church. The team is our local police departments who, you know, we work with on a monthly basis to provide community beat meetings and CAP meetings and talking about ways in which we can use technology like ShotSpider to be able to identify where shots are being fired in the community. You know, it's about our leadership team understanding that we are having impact on persons who would otherwise have to go into situations of possible mortality. So when you're saying, well, violence is having its effect in Chicago, habilitative systems and our team is creating opportunities for folks to say, there's an alternative to violence. We can find a better way.
Thanks, Donald. Maria, innovation is a popular term in the lexicon, and I think every for-profit business is obsessed with innovation. Beyond the day-to-day services that you provide, what are new innovations going on in your world to constantly improve your work and your results?
Sure. Well, you know, as I think of our team in innovation and the whole, you know, concept of innovation, I think that the nonprofit human service sector pretty much invented or reinvented innovation, sometimes because of need and other times because it's always about how do you make it better for the families that we serve? So some examples on innovation really come back to listening and knowing our community. I'm going to share something with you as to, you know, so we're a women's organization, Mujeres Latinas en Acción, Latin Women Taking Action. And we had this really great services for women and young women, and certainly parents included fathers in our training, but our focus was around women and her family. And the programs that we had for the young women in our youth program were about prevention and strengthening. But as we were listening and coming back to
looking at not only at the data of what was happening to our young men in the community and across the country, we were also listening to our moms. And I remember one story from a mom who said to me, we were doing our mother-daughter leadership program, and she said to me, "Thank you for helping me with my daughter, but I'm losing my son." And that's when we realized, ooh, we got to step back here and figure out how do we look at models across the country and the work that's being done locally and that's needed. And we came up with a program specifically for young men that included multi-generational, but also looked at the cultural relevance, just as we did our young women's program. Hence, Jóvenes con Palabra, young men of their world, young men of their word, was created. Partnerships that have been created, including one that we're about to embark on in Brighton Park. As you all probably know, around the city of Chicago, gentrification is taking place, a lot having to do with the cost of housing. Well, Pilsen is certainly one place where our folks are no longer, many of, living directly in our neighborhood, but they're moving to places like Brighton Park, Marquette Park, Southwest, and outlying suburbs. So we are partnering with Esperanza Health Center and Sinai Health Center in creating a community wellness center that includes where we will have our youth services, that includes a STEAM program that we already have in place, but also having the behavioral health services of Sinai and having a medical home. Latinas are the least likely to be insured in the city and across the country. So again, innovation comes through partnerships, needs, and listening.
Maria, thank you. Nancy, considering the ongoing violence in Chicago, what role do you see community-based human services as playing in helping to alleviate this tragic suffering?
Well, I think you can ask any beat cop what the solution is, and while policing is a piece of it, they'll often and persistently say, we need to help families get stronger. We need to help communities come together and take ownership of what's happening in the community. And human services, the nonprofits, the volunteers, the business partnerships are where the catalyst for enduring solutions really resides. And I feel like we have sometimes a seat at the table, but clearly we have deep roots in community. We understand how to partner respectfully and creatively with community members and community leaders to forge enduring solutions. So I think we are an untapped reservoir of talent and strength, and often perhaps not invited into or not able to participate because the instability of funding, again, witness Illinois, makes it hard to be able to fulfill a promise to community to be there and to respond to those crisis needs and those enduring evidence-based practices like mentoring and so on.
Nancy, thanks. Donald, could you speak to that as well, please?
Yes. I'd like to introduce for some and remind others of this term of poly-victimization. Many times when we hear about violence within the city of Chicago, we hear about gunshot victims, we hear about people being murdered, and yes, we hear about the comparisons to Iraq and Afghanistan, and yes, it's a bad situation, it's a terrible situation. It's really an intolerable situation when you think about it. But also think about persons who are having to go to jail for nonviolent offenses. Think about those persons who, for the first time in their life, has to go to jail. Think about the victimization that occurs there. Think about the trauma that occurs there. Think about the trauma that a child goes through on a regular basis. There's been comparisons to children and experience of violence within the community being called post-traumatic stress. Well, I submit to our group today, that is not post-traumatic stress. It's chronic stress. It doesn't stop. Every day these children wake up, they experience this violence, or the threat of the violence. So we have to create new opportunities for folks to feel that there is a safe haven. Agencies like Habilitative Systems and those that are represented here today present that safe haven and a new opportunity for these families who are in these very desperate situations. When you think about us working as small economic engines, local economic engines, an agency like HSI constructing 160 units of housing for seniors and people with disabilities, who would otherwise be in nursing homes and state institutions, infusing $20 million into the local West Side community, employing numerous tradesmen. I remind everybody, social workers didn't build those facilities. We're putting people to work. We're giving people jobs. We're creating opportunities for folks to have hope. And we've got to have a sense of urgency about this. This violence is not something that we should tolerate.
Thank you, Donald. Thank you. So those of you that know me know this next question would, like, you'd kill me if I didn't ask this next question. So, Maria, how has the Illinois state budget crisis negatively impacted your organization, and more broadly, how have you seen it impact the community in general?
And you asked that directly to me. So let me step back and say, many of us around the room, whether we're in the nonprofit sector, the business sector, or the for-profit sector, understand business development. And, you know, there are really, you know, one can go into the life cycles of any business or not, but there's three pieces to it. At one point, you're in a position that you're trying to start up. You could be in a crisis mode, sustaining mode, and strategic mode. This crisis mode, or this state fiasco, has really made it very difficult for us to be strategic and be thinking long term. And just every time we get into sustaining, we get right back to crisis and can't get right to strategic. So even having that conversation, making the comment about we're doing these collaborations and looking at Brighton Park, there's that back in my head thinking, how do we really become strategic and innovative as best that we can be if we're constantly in crisis mode? So how has it affected us? Well, you know, talk about ongoing stress on a day-to-day, not just for those of us running organizations, but providing the services, but also on the folks that we serve. I recall because there have been all these cycles of beginning with late payments, no contract, no payments, and it's, you know, been on and on for a number of years. I have board members who said, "Oh, do we have to talk about the state again?" And because it doesn't allow us to look at things strategically, but it is part of the formula. And as we think about going back to one of the first times that when we were hearing how are we going to have to make some cuts, I remember a woman who came to our office, who was basically, she was a rape victim, a survivor, who said, "Does this mean I will no longer have counseling? My nightmares are starting to dissipate." And so these are the kind of things that are not just affecting the fear of our staff, who many are leaving because they can't sustain themselves, wondering what no raises in a number of years, or furloughs. And I can tell you, when we talk about a team that that really wants to make this happen, last year we posed to our staff, we said, "Well, we don't know what's going to happen. There's no budget. It might take 3 months. We don't know." 20 months later. And looking at this, this is what's in the budget, or this is what is in the governor's budget. This is what in the legislator's budget. This is what we have contracts for. This is what we don't have. So based on this strategy, this is what is this going to do? We'd have to lay off a certain amount of people, or we're going to have furloughs. Let's take a vote on this. Do you want me to tell you, everybody, every single person on our team, including those who would be able to stay were part of a contract, said, "We will furlough." We started with 2 furlough days a week. This is the kind of sacrifice our team put in place. And even those individuals who were on their furlough days were coming in. So when we say, "Well, yeah, nothing's really being hurt in the state. Nobody's really being affected. Our economy's being affected. Our staff is being affected. The entire state is being affected at the shoulders of people who care and are committed to make this state work." So we are better than this in the state, and I hope
that we don't go to 24 months.
Thanks, Maria. So I
you can tell
see
I'm a little
the gentleman that's that standing behind me that we're going to start taking questions from the audience. But before he throws me off completely on the mic, again, those of you know me, you know where I'm going. Yes, you can do something. This isn't just we're talking at you, right? This is something you can do. And I want to remind you of the word cloud. If you don't remember anything else from the conversation today, although I hope that's not true, but if there's one thing I hope you take away, it's the fact that people do not understand what is human services. And for as long as that occurs, we are going to continue to battle as we are all battling right now. And so what can you do? You can volunteer and sit on boards. You can give more money to charities, and you can help us raise awareness to the community and the elected officials of the importance of what we do and help us be able to carry the word on as to what is human services. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Judith, Donald, Maria, and Nancy. And if anybody has any questions, just hold up your blue card, and our staff members will come by and pick them up. I see one up here, and I'm sure there'll be some others. We have a couple of questions that I have here for our panel. This is from Dan Strick with an organization called New Star.
All the way back there in the back corner. Thank you, Dan.
Thanks, Dan. And you can decide who would like to handle this question.
Oh, my gosh, the pressure.
Have you heard of any state policymakers making contingencies in the event Medicaid is block granted or on a per capita basis? So which of our panelists would like to begin addressing that?
Sure.
Judith.
So, yeah, I'll take that on. So I will tell you, and if you don't believe me, you can check my notes. The very last question that I would have asked had I had more time was going to be about what do you think what's going on in D.C. and how do you think that's impact what's going to impact here in Chicago and Illinois. So thanks for the question, Dan. So I will give kudos and a real round of applause to Jennifer Hammer and the governor's office for writing a letter to D.C. and informing D.C. that it is not acceptable for the feds to decide to move Medicaid into block grant or per capita spend. That the way that we operate as a state and the importance of the Medicaid program in Illinois, that it is really important that the administration understand Illinois' position. So I really do a great shout out and for the support that we've been given. We know that in conversations that we've had with Secretary Demas and Norwood and others, I don't know, is Kari in the room? Kari was going to be here from DHS. So we know from folks in Department on Aging that we have spoken with that they are in conversations with the governor's office about what this might look like. I think we're all hoping that the great advocacy that's being done, and I hope you're watching the news and seeing the turnout every single night with the question about the Affordable Care Act and for those folks on Medicaid, the question about Medicaid and Medicare, that we hope that you will continue to do your advocacy and let folks know that this is really not acceptable. And you guys in Illinois, we could never afford to move into a position where we would have to absorb that kind of money that we spend and billions of dollars that we spend every year on Medicaid.
Thank you. Any one of our panelists want to add anything to what Judith has offered? Nancy?
I would just say what's happening in D.C. Adds a new layer of instability and unpredictability to a state that has brought that to a form of art. So we don't need any more instability or uncertainty. We have some good public-private partnerships trying to create a better system, and I think that our ability, that is the human services sector and the communities that we serve, to do the right next thing and get better at what we're doing is now kind of up for grabs. So,
thank you. Okay. This question is from Lisa Radin. She's a member of the City Club. What are your plans to tap the hearts and wallets
of suburbia to help with inner city issues. Maria, you want to lead the discussion on that? Thank you.
Sure. Well, you know, I think that inner city issues, suburban issues, are kind of crossing in many ways. I grew up in the southwest suburbs. I can tell you, you know, that so many of the issues that are affecting Summit, Illinois, Cicero, Berwyn are affecting many pockets of the city of Chicago. And so I think it's more of awareness that of folks who might want to be engaged in interested in supporting the cause of these various issues. So I guess I want to talk about the importance of diversification of resources of organizations across the state, including the city of Chicago and the suburbs. Many of us were dependent on, and rightfully so. You know, I don't think that we should let the state off the hook, because it is our taxpayer dollars that are at work here, or not at work. But I think that it is important for organizations to be diversified in resources. And if anything good has come out of this, it has been the awareness of diversification and the need for people to be supporting privately the organizations and causes that they believe in. And so we have seen an increase of individual support. It's not going to cover the whole state money, but we have seen an increase to help the causes, not just in our organization, but across. So I guess I know I'm tweaking the question, but I just want to make sure that it's clear that it's not an inner city problem. It is a problem with there are problems within Chicago metropolitan area and in different parts of the state, they should not be looking at we should not be looking at it as their problem, our problem, but it is our problem.
Donald, would you like to comment?
Yes, thank you. I think it's important for us to continue to focus strategically. And when I say that, we've got to look constantly at our strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and certainly threats. The strengths of organizations, the strength of what we've been doing for all these years is evident. The weaknesses that our organizations have in terms of infrastructure and the ability to compete within this environment is also evident. But there are also significant opportunities. And when we talk about the opportunities with telling our story to suburbia, the opportunity is also right here within the city of Chicago. We've got to take advantage and seize the opportunity to tell the business community, like we're doing today, about our value, our worth, and the fact that we, in fact, are essential to the lifeline in the city of Chicago. Think about it. Think about what it would look like a day of absence for human services. Think about hospitals. Think about all the social services that you've heard articulated here today. Think about the impact of all the businesses, and I'm talking about businesses like ComEd, People's Gas, all of whom we get energy from, and all who really benefit from us being in business. Think about it if we were not here. Think about what would happen with a person who has an alcoholic episode or overdoses on opiates. You know, suburbia is experiencing that. It's just not within the city of Chicago. Over on the west side of Chicago, we see folks getting off at 290, picking up drugs on the west side, driving out to the suburbs. It's not an inner city problem. It's going on right here, and it's going on everywhere. And what we've got to understand is that the issue of stress is universal. Folks who are unable to handle stress can decompensate at any moment in time. It can happen downtown. It can happen on the west side. It can happen in Inglewood. It can happen in suburbia. There's nothing that we're doing that does not impact the populace as a whole. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Maria, Nancy, Judy, do you want to comment? Fine. Well, you sort of touched on this in a little way, but this question's from Yvette Cardona with the Polk Brothers Foundation. No longer 3000 North on Central, by the way. You'd have to be my age to know that reference. What's the possibility of a day without human services as a strategy to build awareness of the importance of our work?
So, Yvette, thank you. So a couple of years ago, we kicked this idea around for real. And what I mean by that is we investigated this through attorneys who we asked to look at our contracts to understand what would be the legal ramifications for doing this, right? So there's the there's the one side, which is, and these guys have spoken about this beautifully, right? Which is the heart side, right? We all do this because we're in this, believe me, we're in this because we're passionate and we care about helping our neighborhoods and our communities. That's why we're in this work. So there's the one side. How could you decide that you're not going to take care of a senior today and deliver them food? How can you decide that you're not going to take care of children? Right? So that's the one side. But the other side, which we really looked at, was the legal side, the business side. Because what we wanted to make sure that didn't happen was if we found out that we were going to be caught because we broke a contract, what was going to be the obligation? And how were we going to be able to stand up to our nonprofit coalition partners and say, this is a good thing to do, guys, and then all of a sudden, A, everybody gets sued, worst case, right? Or B, nobody gets contracts again, right? Because they decide to go to a different direction for how they're going to do these services. So I want to share that in my true being, in my heart, I would give anything to do a day without human services. What Donald just described is so authentic and so real. And what I've been touting at chambers and rotaries around the state of Illinois for the last over 2 years is the understanding to the business community that without us, not only are their employees going to suffer, but so are the people that are their consumers. Their consumers are not going to be able to go and buy and do things if there's not human services in their community. So Yvette, believe me, if there was even one lawyer who told me it was legal, I was on it.
Thank you. Maria?
I'd like to mention, you know, as an organization who was founded by a group of women who were, you know, advocates and, you know, involved with las marchas and so on, even our women and staff would have a very difficult time doing that. But I'd like for us to think about it virtually. That let's just imagine a day without human services. No child care. So how are people going to get to work? Right? No after school care. A woman in violence who needs her counseling or support, who could be your sister, could be your neighbor. Right? Just if we go on health services on and on, if we just thought of it virtually, what that would mean. And we're kind of limping right now. We're basically limping because of the situation that's happening at the state. So we don't have to imagine a virtual world. Think of it as a limping world now as a result.
Thank you. Okay, this question here is from Valerie Leonard. Valerie, where are you? Oh, very good. Okay. Nancy, maybe you want to start on this because we didn't ask you your response to that other question. Assume you had a couple of minutes to meet with Governor Rauner. What message would you send to him about the importance of continued investment and increased investment in social services? What would you say? And then we could ask the others as well.
I would say, Governor Rauner, the solution you're looking for a vibrant Illinois is found with the deep investment, in fact, the richer investment in the human services capability of communities across the state of Illinois. Children's Home and Aid serves in 60 counties across Illinois, so we are active rural, suburban, urban, inner city. We understand the rich opportunity that is there. We develop talent. We have the future workforce. We have the customer base. And if Illinois wants to achieve better outcomes in terms of the economy, education, and healthcare, human services is the rocket fuel. So I would say think strategically and generously about, and courageously about, the investments that we have evidence today will pay off very quickly, as in some of the programs we offer for children who and youth who are right in front of a judge saying it's either jail or you're going to work with Children's Home and Aid and you're going to get back in school and you're going to get back on track. Those kids who we have been able to serve go back to school or back in, with family and back on track, or we can pay a couple hundred dollars a day and put you behind bars, and you can learn there what those lessons are. Today, we can make that difference for kids, and those are young people who have great things to bring to their communities and to our collective future. So I would say let's get courageous and invest, because it will pay off in the near and the far term.
Thank you. Donald, Maria, would you like to add anything briefly?
Sure. Interestingly enough, I had an opportunity to speak to Governor Runner and say a few things. the meeting occurred as a result of Dr. Willa Wilson's interest in bailing out folks who were sitting in Cook County Jail for months simply because they could not make bail. Can you imagine being sent to jail because you stole a candy bar, or you were busted with a marijuana cigarette, and now you're in jail with violent offenders, people who have murdered, people who have raped, people who have pillaged, people who have done some of the most unthinkable things. And you're sitting there as a first offender. But you can't leave that confinement because you can't make bail. You can't post $100 bail. Dr. Wilson said, you know what, this is just unthinkable. And it's one of the reasons why Illinois was chosen as one of the states to engage in criminal justice reform. Because we understand that there was a new Jim Crow out here, that there was a group of folks, African-Americans primarily and people of color, who had been targeted for incarceration. It's the new Jim Crow. It's a new form of slavery. It was happening and has been happening all across this country. So he said, enough is enough. Can we get these people out of jail? Can we stop this madness? And when I was called by Dr. Wilson because he said, I've been told by Sheriff Dart and others that most of the people are there because they require mental health and substance abuse treatment. So it makes no sense for me to bail them out of jail if, in fact, they don't get treatment. I said, it's not a problem unless I can't get paid by the state. So he said, really? I said, yes, sir. He said, well, I'll set up a meeting with Governor Runner, which he did. I said, Governor, we can support this wonderful initiative if we can just keep our monies flowing for mental health and substance abuse. And he committed to really trying to make that happen. But we also talked about ideas in which that could happen. So, for example, if we know that based on social determinants of health, that we've got to engage in employment and affordable housing and all these other social determinants, why not look at other areas of the budget, such as central management services, and give agencies like Habilitative Systems and those represented here today opportunities to provide work incentives for people? Why not do as Lighthouse for the Blind has done? Did you all know that they're actually refurbishing those transponders, those iPasses? Got a $2 million plus contract from the state of Illinois. They're doing a fabulous job. Now, if a person who is visually impaired can do this work, and an agency like HSI assembled 8,000 telephones for the Democratic National Convention back in 1996, people with developmental disabilities, well, what about those folks who are unskilled, uneducated? What about giving them opportunities to work on government contracts, Governor? What about reaching into the Department of Employment and Commerce and Opportunity to look at those contractual opportunities are there? We've got agencies represented like A.S. McKinley, who've been doing business with the military, millions of dollars worth of business with the military. We've got other agencies who have been able to forge significant partnerships with health institutions. So we said to the governor, we've got partners out there. Rush University Medical Center just published a community needs assessment that said, you know, there's been disproportionate effect. There's been disparities in health care. We're not pleased with the health outcomes that we're getting in the West Side communities. We've got to engage our communities more. So we said to the governor, we said, you've got partners out here like Rush University Medical Center who are ready and willing to put their dollars into the community to help support the vital programs, the essential programs that we operate. So I said to the governor, if you can tap into those reservoirs and those resources, there are those in the community as well to help support those efforts.
Thank you.
Thank you.
One last question, and this is directed to you, Judith, since you started. We'll give you the honor of answering the last question. This is from Gerardo Cardenas with AARP sitting over there. On the state budget issue, shouldn't the question rather be, what are our state legislators doing about it? How do we hold their feet to the fire? People have had enough of this dysfunction. How would you reply?
Thanks. What a nice way to end this wonderful luncheon. So I concur. We have, I would do this as a test, but I think we're almost out of time. We have 177 members of the General Assembly. And I think it is imperative that every single one of those 177 individuals hear from the folks within their districts about this impact. Until the pressure is felt at the local level, again, I just want to reflect on what's going on this week from Congress being on break and being back in their districts, and you're watching these town hall meetings, right? So until we ourselves and the people that we serve and our boards of directors and our funders come together to be able to go and meet with these 177 individuals and let them know that we expect more from them, the pressure really needs to be at a very, very local level. Now, I say that, and that does not take Governor Warner off the hook. This is a, we have a three-tiered government, right? And so the two tiers that are battling really need to be able to come together. And so in the vein of we need to do local work and local outreach, I would also implore everybody to make sure that they know the phone numbers of the governor's office and that they're calling the governor's office and leaving a message and letting them know that this isn't going to be able to take it any longer. My personal conviction is that when they see people like me and Donald and Maria and Nancy, and I could call out a lot of you guys in the room who I know, my opinion is that when they see you coming, they already know what you're going to say. They've already met with you. They know what your plea is. They know what you're asking. It is my personal conviction that until we turn on the business leaders, the business people, the people who sit on our boards who are business leaders and civic leaders, until we turn them on to be our voice and go and meet with our elected officials, they're the ones that financially support these people that are running for office. They're the ones that turn out the vote. So it is my belief that members of the City Club and those of you that are here and have boards of directors that are business leaders really need to be the fuel that will end up lighting the fire to make a difference.
Well, thank you very much. Folks, let's give everybody a round of applause.